Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. And today I have with me Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
Eric.
Hello.
And Tom.
Hello.
All right. Today we are discussing Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones.
So Eric slept through our Daredevil discussion. And he tried to deny it.
Allegedly.
But But he's here for Jessica Jones. And so it's fresh on everyone's mind. It also stars a ex-doctor.
Yay!
And true. That doctor was David Tennant. And he was the baddie of that one. But before we get into the bad guys, I think we're just going to kind of top it off with discussing how we felt about Jessica Jones on a whole, its relationship to other Marvel TV shows, films, properties, blah, blah, blah. So I guess I'll go first. Jessica Jones to me is the Battlestar Galactica of Marvel things, mainly because it was depressing and it was intriguing and it was good, but I can't say that I liked it. You know, I appreciate it, but it wasn't my favorite. I somehow watched it all in one sitting, and I think I watched it all in one sitting because I knew if I stopped watching that I wasn't gonna go back to it. But I appreciate that there are a lot of new things going on with her, but they weren't new in a way that impressed me. I liked that instead of having a male gumshoe, it was a female gumshoe. That's fine. But then to see the whole gumshoe thing, I really wanted Dresden Files as opposed to Jessica Jones. I appreciate the shirtless male sex scenes or whatever, but I mean, I could watch porn for that, and I've seen better porn with men in it, and so this just doesn't do that for me. So we got to see a female character who was non-traditional for female characters. However, I mean, I'm a woman, and I've seen women behave this way, and it's not nothing new to me, so it was just like, whatever. The powers on this show, they were okay, right? They weren't sexy, but there's just like, oh, you can pick up things and this one guy can walk through fire or whatever. Okay, fine, that's fine. And then David Tennant, he was amusing. He was really, I didn't feel sorry for him. I was really annoyed with him. I think he played the character really good. He was, to me, the best part of it. But other than that, I mean, it's an okay show. It was not my favorite of the Marvel TV shows. Like I said, Daredevil is my favorite. But this one, I could see how it was good, and I see why a lot of people appreciated it. But it's okay to me. If a second season were to occur, maybe I'd watch it if I didn't have anything else to watch. So there's Kat. Opinion on Jessica Jones.
Oh boy.
Who wants to go next?
Tom, I think you should go next. Tom, what you think?
Come on. All right. I like Jessica Jones. I think it does a whole lot of things really, really well. And I think that for me, the essence of a good superhero show is it comes from, it's like when you're sitting around with your friends and you say, what would you do if you could read minds? Or what would you do if you had super strength? And you go from there. And that's always a blast, because right after you make that leap, you're back in the real world. What would I do with that once I'm back in the real world? And to me, this show comes closest to doing that. They establish some of her power and Kilgrave's powers. And then you're back in the real world. and you just get to see how it plays out. And I really like that they did that, because I have a hard time suspending my disbelief for superhero shows, because I love sci-fi, but and superhero shows, but I like I don't buy into all of these worlds all the time that they set up. I need it to just be a good story, and I need them to do a good job making me believe that everything's real. So that's my overview of how I felt, I think.
Nice. Eric?
All right. My short answer is that this is right up there with Daredevil as far as superhero-related shows of, let's just say, the last 4 or 5 years. This and Daredevil are right up there, cream of the crop for me. It's both a good thing and a bad thing. It seems that the Jessica Jones show shares a lot with Daredevil, but yet at the same time, it's different. And as much as I like it, there are a couple things I'm not great about, but they're not the end of the world type things. And again, I guess you guys already talked about Daredevil, but if I had to choose between the two, I'd probably still lean towards Daredevil. But that being said, this is pretty close. It's right up there with Daredevil for me. That's the short and easy answer.
Carl?
It is dark in tone, similar to Daredevil, but while Daredevil has sort of a dark environment and dark situations, but light characters in it. You know, the sunshine seems to come from the people in that. It just all seems dark with Jessica Jones. The environments are dark. Characters are dark. The trauma that they have to endure is dark. It just feels dark all the way through. It's a little hard for me to watch. It's a little hard for me to watch. I watched it primarily because Kat so strongly suggested that I watch
it.
What?
This is weird.
My God.
This is
you
really
just
weird.
Came after me. Make sure you watch.
Because so it's good. So just doesn't mean that I didn't, you know. It was good.
So what is it about this show that Kat loves so much? And so I sit down and I'm watching it and I'm trying to piece it together. And I'm sitting there, I'm going, okay, well, maybe it's the villain. What was it? And so I start to pay attention and I start to piece together what the nature of the villainy is in Jessica Jones. And particularly, you know, I was like, well, maybe trying to understand it. Now, the one thing Marvel does great is they take problems, they take real stressors, and they twist it and exaggerate it and they make it big, and they make these very realistic villains and very realistic problems. Except they customize and they shift it into the superhero world. So I'm looking at the villainy of Purple Man here. We were trying to get this whole thing down with what his evil is. And you listen to how Jessica describes it. She goes, "When I was with him, I wasn't in control of my actions. When I was with him, I wasn't who I wanted to be. When I was with him, I did things that, you know, I never would do normally. He said things, and it basically his whole sort of ability to control me." What Marvel has done is taken every woman's ex-boyfriend and made him a supervillain. That's what it is. That is exactly what it is. Every woman's ex has now become the supervillain, and that is what his power is. And so I'm sitting here watching this, and wait a minute. Wait a damn second here. And I'm sitting here, and I'm going through this, and Jessica Jones is definitely seems to be tailored a little bit more towards the ladies here. And when you start to break down the villainy and the nature of the crimes and all that stuff, that's where it's going.
You know what? I disagree with that, but we'll talk. I'll let you finish, but I disagree with that.
I know you would, but it's
I enjoy that interpretation immensely.
I mean,
I don't care if it's right or wrong.
Yeah, no, no.
Oh my God, Tom!
I will challenge you all day on this, Cat. But I'm looking at this and I'm going, wait a damn second, because that's what it is. That is exactly what's going on here, and that's why I think it resonates with so.
I think that you could switch the gender on this is what they did. You can switch the gender, and it would still be as oh, that's every guy's crazy ex-girlfriend. Nope. I mean, you could switch it the same way. I don't think that this has anything to do with gender. I think that if it was a woman and she was a manipulative bitch or whatever like that, and the guy was the strong guy or whatever, it would be the same exact story. This has nothing to do with gender.
I'm sure you would say that, but it's really not. No, it's not at all. It's very, very much because, I mean, if you think about it, in terms
you will not acknowledge that if the roles were reversed, that it would be the same type of thing. It could be the same story.
It could be, but that's not how it resonates. The whole...
I don't think it would resonate the same way either if you...
You'd
have to change a lot more than just the gender, I think, if you wanted it to resonate the same way if you flip the script.
It's true. I mean, what's going on here is the challenges and, the general danger and pain that is perceived by Jessica throughout this story is very similar to the type of pain that you talk about when there is rape going on. It is the kind of pain that's going on with abuse, particularly in a relationship. This stuff, I mean, it's a dark twist on it and it's exaggerated for the comic book value, but the problems that she is having are very much in line with that kind of pain. And it's just taken into the comic book in the comic book scale. It's interesting because this is what Marvel does masterfully. It's just that for the first time, I believe, they have targeted these particular types of pain that come from relationships. And in a lot of times, this is the nature of the pain that's described by women. And I think it's interesting. I'm not playing it down or anything, but I just haven't seen it done this way before. I haven't seen this portrayed anywhere. And to have it done in a comic book environment, very interesting. Very interesting. But
I kind of interpreted Kilgrave as an endless spoiled child.
Yeah.
That he'd always had anything. What would happen if you had somebody who always got what he wanted forever?
I agree with him as a standalone villain. That is true, but we're talking about why Jessica has a problem with him. She just her reaction to him,
but he's controlled all the other people in the group.
Yeah, everybody's got problems.
And everybody had a problem with him, not just guys. They had a whole freaking group therapy session about this guy, females and males, who he has harmed. So I'm pretty sure it really bothers me that you say that this is just a female. He's the worst ex-boyfriend. It's not true. I just don't see that.
Here's the other thing that I
think if you swap the genders, it would be.
Hang on. Let me just add this, okay? If this was, instead of Jessica Jones, Luke Cage. If this was Luke's story about trying to somehow survive an encounter with Kilgrave, this would not feel at all the same.
Yes. Agreed. And Kat, I'm slightly confused listening to this because how else would we explain a lot of the massive fan culture on this particular show that revolves around what Carl is talking about? Because if you did do what Carl is suggesting, and let's say the focus was on Luke Cage and his relationship.
But Luke is different from Jessica. I'm talking about a male Jessica Jones and a female Kilgrave.
Well, no. Why bother then? Why not? Why can't it just be two guys?
If it's two guys and somebody hurt you in a relationship and he was having sex with them and all these other, it'd be the same story
if it was two guys. Fine. Even if we have a female Kilgrave and a male Luke Cage.
Or a female Kilgrave and a female Jessica Jones or a male Jessica Jones and
fine.
A male Kilgrave. I mean, either way.
Mix it up however you want. I don't think you would garner the same fan reaction and et cetera conversation as what has happened.
Nope.
Because what was the fan reaction? Because I don't know what it was.
The stuff Carl is talking about
Well, I didn't get that at all. That is not what I got.
It's completely fair that you didn't get it, but...
Why is it fair that I didn't get it, but you think that every other female or whatever is that's what makes us like this show or what makes it good?
I only say this because of the few people I talk to or interact with on Twitter, but not just them, but just take a stroll down Tumblr lane if you like.
Well, Tumblr is weird. Those are for weird people.
Okay, say what you will, but see what they're the not majority, the gauge of. Look at what the majority of.
The majority of what you've seen, that's not scientifically sound.
I had a feeling that Kat was going to say this.
What was scientifically sound?
I am simply going to say that, as usual, Marvel finds a point of pain and exaggerates it for the value of the comic, for the value of the villainy.
Carl, you think that was the source of their creation? Do you think that's the concept they started with?
I don't know.
To do female? That is just so weird.
It can be interpreted. It can definitely be interpreted that way.
It's interesting, but I didn't see it that at all.
I don't know if that's what they started with, but these particular areas of pain that go throughout this series are unique to a lot of the pain that we have heard from people who've been in abusive relationships, people who've been victims of all sorts of sexual abuse. It is very interesting to see that kind of pain one after another laid out in the story this way. It is just, that's what I'm saying. So I don't know if that was their motivation. I don't know if that's where the source came from. But when you look at underrepresentation, when you look at oppression, when you look at powerlessness in all sorts of other different areas of superheroes, you can sort of trace it back to, okay, well, maybe this has to do with, maybe it's a racial thing, or maybe it's got something to do with, people who have disabilities. Maybe, and you can kind of feel the roots of where that stuff comes from. With Jessica Jones, there is a very strong similarity, a strong kind of a trend to this type of area, and that's what I feel when I see it. And I'm just saying it's unique because typically this kind of pain is underrepresented. You don't see it. It's not given voice. And to finally see it done in the superhero environment, which is again what Marvel really excels at. They take something that you would not expect to see in a superhero world, and they bring it out and exaggerate it with the villain and all that. It's very interesting. It's hard to watch. This is a particularly painful kind of space to be dwelling in. And
yeah, I found Kilgrave pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
And I was pleased with that. And I think that this show got me to suspend my disbelief to such a point that I really bought in. And once I bought in, that guy became really scary. Because he every little thing he says has terrifying consequences. He'll say, go stare at that wall forever or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the consequences are just heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I found him to be probably, and it's not that he's the scariest idea of a villain out there. I mean, we've seen other villains with mind control, et cetera. But the fact that I bought into the show so much. I really let myself think it's real, and so he becomes really scary. Mm-hmm. So, and I think I bought into this show as being real a little bit more than Daredevil. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Eric, Kat?
No, I mean, I see what you... Well, I guess I had the response that I did to what you said, Carl, because I didn't see any of that.
No, but that's fair. I don't... I mean...
But it's just odd to hear that that you and Eric both saw that and you've seen it. Other people say it. Let me finish, Eric. It's just odd to me that you guys saw it, I didn't see it, and then you say other people said it. And then now, yeah, it does make sense that you would see it, and I do get how it could be appreciated because it is an underrepresented space. People don't talk about this thing, blah, blah, blah. But it's just, I don't know. I guess I was seeing it from some other different perspective that was not that I am accustomed to not viewing things by not gender or whatever. To me, in my mind, it could have been a guy or a gal. And as a matter of fact, to me, it felt like Jessica Jones was just a male character that they turned into a female. You know what I'm saying? And it could have easily could have been Jesse Jones, you know, to me. So that's how much of a person she felt like to me as a whole person, that she just didn't have like standard female attributes that, you know, people would think of, you know, a proper female in today's society, because she has none of those attributes. So I didn't.
The gender was different.
It was just, she wasn't traditional.
I think Kilgrave abuses people on a really personal level.
Yeah.
And so any abuse in the real world could be, you know, it could be interpreted, the show could be interpreted as talking about any abuse happening in the real world. But again, that's one of the things that makes him so scary is we've seen a lot of supervillains that, well, you know, are just into blowing things up or destroying the city you know, blowing up city blocks. And this
was psychological. This guy,
very.
Yeah, this guy does real psychological damage on an individual basis. And it's just much scarier. It's much more visceral. I don't know.
Because he's turned a guy, a random guy he did not know, into a drug dealer. I mean, a drug addict.
Yeah.
Just a spy.
Yeah, and it was just so bizarre. And then, like, I think Carl made this joke to me, like, this guy used a bunch of freaking inkjet ink. Like, what was he spending that? Where was he getting the money from to do that? He spent that
just
inkjet
on ink cartridges. Pictures that he printed out of Jessica. That was a heck of a collage he had rocking.
I'm like, oh my God, he was printing on like a Canon or something. You know that ink is expensive. What person was paying for all that ink to print those pictures of that child? You know what I'm saying? It's I think I maybe, because sometimes when people say things and gender or they feel a certain way about things, I'm often shocked because I know I don't view the world the way other people view it all the time. So I don't know. I guess I have to sit with it and think about your perspective on it. But yeah, go ahead.
Add another thing. So what we're describing now is a guy who won't stop calling, who takes pictures of you when you are not around, who obsesses.
He does do the stalker thing.
I mean, this is like
I guess now that you say it, like
ex-boyfriend is what we're talking about here. With superpowers. So, you know.
That really takes a lot out of the show for me. I don't know. It just makes it cheap now. Like, it makes it not as powerful as it felt to me when I did not feel that way, or I did not see that perspective. And when I see that perspective now, it's just like, it's a turn off because then it makes it, oh, this is all female characters can do. We can only do it. Like, the only motivation they have is related to men and
Evil is evil. I mean, I'm just,
well, that's what I said in the beginning.
But how does understanding that structure or that situation in this show,
because it makes it typical.
It is absolutely not typical though.
It is typical.
No, it's not typical.
Why is it not? It's not Marvel SVU pretty much right now.
What?
Okay, if there was such a thing, again, that would not be typical.
It is.
Marvel SVU.
If there was a Marvel SVU, that would not be typical. That's part of what Carl was saying. How is it typical though? It's not typical. I mean,
because that's just like saying, "Oh, we're going to have this female character and we're going to deal with fashion, or we're going to deal with a really evil ex-boyfriend."
If you did that in the guise of a superhero show, that'd be extremely atypical.
Look, what one of my early points about this was, this is an underrepresented viewpoint. and what Marvel does.
But it's underrepresented if it was like two guys and the guy was getting, that would be different. Well, but then every time you talk about a female, it has to be like,
But that would not resonate if you took that, right? Because yes, that's an atypical situation, but it's also an atypical situation that would resonate.
Yeah, but if you're talking about a female lead, then, and you're talking about rape, then that's something that all female characters, they all do too. Like, I mean, not all female characters, but if they do female characters, it's a high percentage. There's going to be a story about rape or creepy ex-boyfriend.
While that trend may exist in other media and is a thing, and you could call it a trope, I think what's more important in this scenario is that it's been executed in a much different way.
Yep.
I agree with that.
Yep. That's what makes it
in
super.
A different...
Wait. You don't agree with it, yet it didn't stand out to you from the beginning. Because
no, it did not.
Well, okay. I don't feel like you can have it both ways.
I do have it both ways. Because it's confusing. It's confusing, and I get it.
I think if it stood out to you in the first place, it would have been more similar to those other examples you're speaking of. And I'm saying the fact that it didn't jump out at you in the beginning, that's part of what separates it from those other examples.
But if other people see it and it's there and I just missed it, maybe because I was not paying attention.
I think it was more well done. I think you missed it because, like you said, Jessica was painted more as this could be a guy or this could be a girl, not necessarily a woman. I think,
but if people still take it as this has happened because this is a woman's problem, then it's still it doesn't matter if I viewed her a different way. If everybody else sees her as this is a woman's problem, superhero.
But the thing is, it's empowering, is what it is. I mean,
I didn't feel empowered.
The fact that, you know, well, basically, we know that she wins in the end. That the ending scene where she finally has to confront Kilgrave, the fact that it's just, you know, she and he one-on-one again in a situation of psychological power, for so many reasons, that was a unique and a powerful ending for this first season of it. I mean, if you want to look at the gender thing, it was important that there was the issue that it was, you know, a man versus woman, loss of power, and now power regained. And then that in the end, no one came to save her in the end of this. She did it herself. That's empowering, and it's part of what magnifies.
But then it makes it a Lifetime movie.
Well, no.
No.
Because it's not heavy-handed, and it's not corny, and it's done in a way that we haven't
seen. Now that you pointed it out, it is.
But look, there's still more. Because, okay, again, I wasn't coming into this conversation thinking I was going to defend this angle, let me just say up front. Because I'm just
I had to defend Jupiter Ascending, so, you know, okay, this is how life works.
I'm just saying
up front that I'm not necessarily speaking from my own personal point of view, because this is not what I hinged my own, you know, attention on when I was watching Jessica Jones for myself. But I'm speaking for other people I've spoken to or other people's opinions I see. I'm just saying that's where I'm coming from. But okay, I think another thing that makes this interesting, rather than if it was just another episode of SVU or some other thing on Lifetime, I think another thing people liked, and another thing that's good when either sci-fi or superhero or speculative fiction shows do this, okay, again, it's taking a real-life situation that a lot of people can relate to, but by some of the comic book twists that you could only do in a comic book superhero show, it made it more interesting for some people. Meaning, obviously, Kilgrave has these supernatural abilities, and it illustrates it in a weird comic book way, like the debilitating feeling that Jessica feels and feeling trapped. And it's a weird analogy for what many people have really felt. And I think that's what makes this also different and special as compared to other shows or other standard rape victim shows, is that it uses the fact that it's a comic book show and not true reality to just further the analogy or whatever. You know, you understand what I'm saying? It's taking advantage of the canvas that it has that a standard show would not have.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that his victims are men and women also makes the pain approachable to guys, because if a guy may not be able to relate to what being a victim of rape is like, the guys that fall victim to Kilgrave in this series,
they don't do very well,
and you start to understand what that loss of control and that loss of power must feel like in a situation like that, and why that same kind of pain is understandable.
Yeah, Kilgrave seems to represent abuse in general.
Mm-hmm.
He represents all kinds of abuse, control and slavery and all kinds of stuff, and yeah, so and I think that it does look to me like they may have explicitly thought about that when they wrote the story. They even have a support. I mean, they have a Kilgrave support group, and it has the kind of problems that support groups have, you know, for people who have been abused. But there's all kinds of. It looks like they collected all kinds of abuse in this show, and they wrapped them all up in one villain.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's pretty scary. I mean, they even do a thing with when you see him as a child, you think he's being abused. You see some child abuse in there.
I thought that was well done because I believed it.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I believed he was abused. Then like they were trying to fix him, and then he did that thing to his parents in the weird torture water chamber, whatever. That was cool. I liked the boyfriend of the child actress who's now Trish. So what is his name? Will? Was he Will?
Yeah, Simpson. Simpson.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. I seen him in other things before, but I haven't seen him quite this intense and dark before, and I really enjoyed seeing him. Cause
oh, you're talking about Super Cop.
Yeah, yeah, okay, I've seen him. I don't know, like maybe in Stargate or Once Upon a Time. He was the sheriff of Nottingham, or he was in.
That's why I don't know him.
What? Right. So I've seen him. He just feels like one of those good guy Canadian actors that you see on like Stargate. That you just like, oh yeah, that guy. And he's Australian, so but anyway, but I just I liked that I liked his whole feel, and I liked that how he went dark, though it did feel like when Buffy had his had that boyfriend, that real normal boyfriend in that one season, that he was a soldier or whatever, remember him?
Yes, I do. Riley.
And then Riley. And then Riley went kind of bad, and then he had to leave or whatever. It kind of felt like that story a little bit.
Yeah, it did.
And
fortunately.
Well, I didn't mind. But, I mean, there were lots of little things that I liked about Jessica Jones. And I don't know that it. I'm not really sure how I feel about what Carl said or how you and Eric feel about the whole gender thing, because I did not see it at first.
I think that's a good thing.
That is a good thing, because I didn't see it them as doing the whole creepy. I just saw him as a guy who wanted to control somebody that he couldn't control, and it just happened to be Jessica Jones and other people he really didn't care about because he was obsessed.
Well, see, I see it kind of more that way too, or I saw it more that way too when I was just watching it by myself in a vacuum. It wasn't until I exposed myself to social media and what everybody else was thinking and saying, that's when I started to pick up on these other points of view.
Right.
If I had just watched this by myself, I would probably be more along with you, Kat.
Right. Well, so you were until you got exposed to other people. And then like and I think it's interesting that Tom said that he likes this world better and it's more believable. I disliked it because of that. I felt
I don't necessarily enjoy the world. I understand that it's dark and I'm not really, it's an uncomfortable place.
Well, no, but said it's closer to reality.
But I love the fact that I believe it so much.
Right. And I think that's why I didn't like it, because like, I'm a spaceship, outer space girl with aliens and weird light, blinky lights and levers and crystals and shit. Like, I'm that girl. So to see something very based in reality without like glowing fists and freaking guy with the Batman voice coming out doing something. I mean, I don't need that all the time, but this was so devoid of that that it was just like watching a regular cop show or a regular anything.
I thought that was cool, by the way.
I didn't care for it at all because it didn't make it special to me. It just felt like, well, why? What's special? Why am I watching this? See, and then I just started watching
into it.
Well, no, I just was watching it for David Tennant because I was like, wow, I didn't know that you could play such a really creepy, like, because I like David Tennant as a doctor. He was an endearing, strong, noble character who, you know, danced along the edges of darkness, but never quite got there. And he never wanted to leave and blah, blah. And then you see him play this just really vile character who harms everyone, who is just like that person, you know, who is completely oblivious to when they hurt you or something like that. But it doesn't matter if it's a guy or a girl, because if you've lived, you've been hurt by both sexes, because I mean, whatever. But I don't know,
Jessica, there was a lot of pain in this series, my two issues with it is, one, if I'm watching a superhero show, I like to see some superpowers on occasion. If I got to watch,
you know, I just said episodes, that, Carl.
I'm backing you up, Kat.
I know.
So, you know, if I'm watching a superhero series and four episodes in, the superpower has been ripping a doorknob off, I'm going to throw an eyebrow. You get an eyebrow right there because I'm like, whoa, what?
Yeah, she does bruise a little easily for a superhero.
There used to be this show called Now and Again that was on maybe about 15 years ago or something.
Jeez.
And it was they portrayed it to be like the $6 million man. It was supposed to be like a reboot or a remake. It wasn't actually, but it was supposed to have that vibe. And the entire series, the only thing we saw the guy do was swing on a rope and pick up a guy in a chair. That was the extent. That annoys me. If you're going to do superhero stuff, I want to see it. So what I thought was uneven about that is, seriously, we go four episodes before we really see anything other than her breaking off doorknobs. She stopped, you know, she picks up the back end of that car a little while. And you get used to the fact that, okay, well, we're not going to see any superpower here, or it's, you know, this is going to be a different kind of superhero story. And then we get toward the end, and then there's that set of episodes where we get Luke Cage's action going on. We got the explosions of him, you know, just walking out of a literal explosion. We get superpower Patsy because she's on the roids, you know, that Luke or whatever his name is. I mean, and there's this really exciting moment. I'm like, oh man, they're really gonna tear this up in the end, you know. So I was looking forward to seeing how the Justice League was gonna come together to try to take out Kilgrave.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
And so I was like, all right, you know, because I'm getting the feeling that's where this is going to go. And then the last three episodes, all of that disappears again. You know, Luke, you go wait in the car, which is fine. If you understand the twist of the genders here, that's fine. Because we knew that she had to do this on her own. But for them to arc so early with all of this, with the fight scenes, because man, that battle scene between Trish and Will and Jessica, where they're all finally duking it out, and Trish is all, you know, amped up on the steroids or whatever, and they're fighting. That scene started to rival the action that we were seeing in Daredevil. I mean, they were remodeling when they were fighting back and forth, going through walls and stuff, and so. We had been very cerebral and very emotional and very, you know, interpersonal all this time with Jessica Jones. And so now we get to this point and I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be how we're going, how the series is going now. We've got all the background. We've got all that stuff square. It's going to be a real fight. And so it's sort of, again, just like everybody was on the roids, it gets you all excited and it's like, okay, now I see where things are going to go. Now I see that, you know, where the background and where the action's going. And it never went back to that level of action in the show. And that's kind of a, it was sort of a, an awkward peak because, look, if you're going to be cerebral and you're going to keep this in the psychological space, then don't tease me with that level of action. That, I mean, because that was an awful lot of stuff. There was an awful lot of stuff that was going on. And so now we had to pull back from all of that. And for the whole rest of the series, we don't revisit that level of action. And what I also thought was really was kind of sad is, man, it was cool to see Trish throwing down at the level because we knew she'd had that kind of training. She does her you know.
Yeah, we're waiting for her to bring that out.
Yeah, she's had her kickboxing that we'd seen early on, and she's always had this feeling like, I want to help, but I'm never going to be able to battle on the scale of these guys. And so to finally see her amped up and being able to compete on with our heroes and our villains, I was like, oh man, this is going to be really exciting to see her empowered that way, to see her come out and do that. But it didn't quite come back.
Season 2 spoiler alert. I mean, come on.
Well, okay.
I mean, I'm just saying, you can't spill all the beans in season 1 of the show.
I'm willing to give it a chance, but it was just, hey, that was a lot. And it was very exciting, and I was hoping to see more of that when we got to the finale. But no, things kind of dialed it back a bit for the finale. And in sort of, well, okay. What did you guys think of the finale, though? What did you guys think about the final resolution between Kilgrave and
It was so disappointing to me that I forgot what she did. She just like snap his neck or something, or what happened?
Yeah, she snapped his neck.
Yeah,
he thought she was immune. He had boosted his powers,
right?
And thought that she was no longer immune, but turned out she was, and she snapped his neck. I don't know why she doesn't just get a rifle in the second episode and just take him out like that. But.
Well, probably. I don't really know. It was an end.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all I got for it. I mean, it was just an end. It wasn't like this big showdown. I thought that it started to get ridiculous. Like, I felt like the show was really in a believable space, like with Tom, and I got used to believable space, but then they start, well, we're gonna make the suit, and they explained how his powers worked, that it was
right.
A virus.
That's where things got a little disappointing.
Yeah, I was like, it was a virus, and he had to be close proximity to spread the virus to you, but he's gonna boost it via microphone, and
yeah,
it's gonna travel through.
Do it through a hospital, and then when she kills him, his powers immediately wear off everybody.
Well, we knew that was the case. They told us early on that was part of it.
But how does the virus turn off?
Exactly.
That way. And how does it amplify through like sound waves? That doesn't make
sense. Eric, help me out, man. You like endings that don't end. What does this all mean?
whoa. No. Okay. First off, I was very disappointed by the ending.
Really?
Thank you.
Yeah. For you to be
disappointed. I really didn't like it because yes, there are already more exciting episodes preceding it. I mean, I know they were trying to extend the storyline to fill the whole season, which is where I think some of the missteps occurred for me. And it was very anticlimactic. And actually also, I thought it behooved Daredevil that Fisk lived to fight another day by the end of the season one. And I think it hurt Jessica Jones that Kilgrave was dead and done at the end. And I think it was. And so in other words, I didn't like that Kilgrave was dispatched already because I thought he was much more interesting than that. And would have been nice to have hang around, not necessarily in season 2 and 3, but to come back another day. And then if you are going to kill him, to go out in such a lackluster way was also, you know.
Thank you. I was wondering if it was just me because.
No, it wasn't great. And then the points that Tom brings up, that's another failing or maybe unavoidable failing because it was something I was thinking about in this show, but I've been thinking about it in a lot of the superhero stuff, not just on TV, but even in the comics, like this whole idea, are you going to kill the bad guys or not? Are you one of the superheroes who believes in capital punishment or not? And this is something I just think about a lot on my own as I'm reading comic books on my own. And, you know, and it was kind of an issue that Daredevil, the character, had to deal with in his series, to kill or not to kill. And I always think it's silly. I mean, well, it's silly to go... I don't like when the superheroes are hampered by not killing. But what I don't like even more is when you try to have it both ways, like Jessica Jones sort of does, where she doesn't, where she wants real justice. But we have to go through like 10 episodes to realize in this particular show that is not the way. We should just kill him anyway. And see, that was what I was trying to work out the whole time watching the series, was is it more worth it just to kill him now or not? And it sucks to go through 13 episodes to realize, oh, that's what we should have just done in the first place. Mm. And because, again, this is an internal argument that I'm in my mind. Is it better to kill these baddies if you have the chance or not? And it always seems like, not just in Jessica Jones, but in all the comics I read, it always seems like it's better to kill just the baddies when you have the chance. Because many tens of hundreds of thousands of innocents die all the time, not just I'm speaking for all comic book stuff, because they don't do away with the baddie the moment they have the chance. And someone needs to write a comic book that addresses this situation, because I think it's a big deal. Like, tons of people are tortured and maimed and die because we prolong these things.
It makes it feel manufactured too when they're doing it for suspense purposes.
Yeah,
and for
manufactured again in a sense that they do want to stretch it out for 13 episodes.
Yeah, but you got to do it in a way that makes it believable.
I enjoyed most of the ride along the way, but yeah, to be hampered by the lackluster ending, that's the one thing that took it down a peg for me, as compared to Daredevil, say. Overall as a show, but it's okay. We can't win every time is how I feel about it, because again, I still enjoyed the ride and there were many interesting things throughout the season that kept me engaged.
I agree. I think the ride was something that I think that's what I was excited about, Carl, that there was a definite thing that, whereas I could not binge watch Daredevil and liked it more, this one somehow it was just like, I just want to get it over. I want to see what is end, or, you know, I need to get to the end. So there was this can't stop watching factor to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the storytelling in Jessica Jones is really tight. The creation and resolution of suspense really is done well, and you don't notice it because it's done so well. You tend to notice that when people screw it up. But I really noticed it when I went back to watch things, to run through these shows a second time. I realized that, unlike Daredevil, this one, I started on the first episode again and I didn't want to skim through it. I got sucked right into it again. And every moment seemed to be important and seemed to matter. And I was really impressed with that in this show. And it made it fun.
If somebody asked me to rewatch it, I'd be really put out. I wouldn't I wouldn't want to rewatch it.
And I was surprised at what felt slow the first time around. And I watched it again, and I realized all these little things that felt slow the first time around had meaning and made sense.
I had the exact same experience as what Tom just said, and I was very impressed by that.
I don't know.
Yeah, the music is, I think, very effective. It's almost exactly like Homeland.
Yes, I was feeling Homeland.
It is the same composer.
Oh, really? Yeah, oh, because I could feel the unsettling discordantness of the sort of jazz music.
Lazy, confused jazz.
Oh, I felt it.
Lazy, confused jazz.
I felt it.
Jazz.
I felt it totally, yeah.
And, I like the fact that there's no magic in here so far.
Well, unless really you count like the
virus going through microphones.
Yeah, unless you count
that's not what happened with that.
What happened?
What happened?
No. I don't think the magic went through the microphones.
Okay.
I think the strength and dispersal of the virus on its own was magnified. The only reason the microphone was involved was just to get the voice command
out
there.
He got the voice through. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
I agree. So here's the thing. I think that they've made a point to try to use science to suspend my disbelief. And there definitely have been times when they've done a crappy job of it. The whole business of it being a virus is really lame. It really is.
No, I think that brought me into it.
Drink some chicken soup. Stay hydrated. Things will be okay.
I like the idea of it as a virus, because if it was some weird mojo, then I'm disappointed at Jessica and the other powers, because, like, what do they mean? What is it? Why is it happening? Right, I don't get it. What's the mechanics of it? Like,
right. What are the mechanics? And I think they have some. The virus is a good place. It's a good place to start, but it needs more explanation than just, yeah, you kind of catch a cold from him, and then if you hear his voice, you'll do it. I don't know why I couldn't buy it. The other thing I was having a hard time buying is that she's sort of, her immunity just kind of shows up at a very convenient time. That was way too convenient, and it felt manufactured. There's a scene, so there's one scene in there where she's like, I think maybe I'm immune. That didn't quite go over well.
All right, I'll give them a break on that, because they do hint of her growing immunity throughout the series. Throughout the episodes.
They do. Okay.
Most poignantly, the first time she, after she pushes
the bus incident.
Yeah, the bus incident. Yeah, we see early on that she kept walking, but we didn't know what to look for when we saw it the first time. So the fact that that was there. I'll cut them some slack.
Yeah,
for that.
I am glad they're using science. I'm glad they're trying.
Even
if they get it wrong and I don't quite buy it, I'm definitely glad they're buying, because it just makes things. It really helps me buy in. I also think that to go over a few other little things that might have been a little disappointing. Her powers are a little confusing to me. She seems to be easily knocked out, but then when she gets knocked out, I think, a little earlier in the season, and then later when she's fighting with Luke, she's just getting thrown through walls, and she doesn't get knocked out, and she doesn't get bruised, and it was a little, that seemed a little real to me. I'm it's fine to me that they spent some time letting you figure out what her powers might be, what the limits of them are. Mm-hmm. But at some point, especially at that point in the season, I wanted them to be very clear. And this is one of my problems with superhero shows in generally, is unclear powers.
Yeah.
Powers need to be really clear. And,
you know, I'm not as bothered by unclear powers, mainly because, like, as a person, as you develop as a person, you don't know your own power, and you have to kind of push yourself to your limits to know.
I understand what you're saying, Kat, but I also understand what Tom's saying.
I understand what he's saying.
This is something that has bothered me in certain
episodes. I get it, though. But I it doesn't bother me, because I feel like, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe we don't know all there is to it.
Right,
but I think maybe what you're looking for is more consistency.
Yeah, consistency would be good. And really, this is one end of the spectrum. I think at like the – it just reminds me of what really bugs me about a lot of super. So you take Heroes, for example, where you get people.
Lord, I was thinking of Heroes.
You know, and some guy who he has magic tattoos, and you know, at first the tattoos tell the future, and then the tattoos do something else, or you get a girl, she can control light for a while, and then you find out she makes big cloudy things, and then people's powers disappear around her when it's convenient. And
or they get more power when they go to a circus or a carnival, you know.
So, yeah, you know, and that to me is just, like, it's confusing, and that keeps you at square one in enjoying the show, because you're not anticipating what people can and can't do. It's much more satisfying when you have creative uses of very simple powers. And I really liked that about Kilgrave's power, was that it's very simple. He says something and people just have an uncontrollable urge to do it. And it lasts 12 hours. And it's really simple, but they keep playing out how creative that can get. And I liked that exploration that I see being wasted in a lot of superhero shows. Because, and again, it goes back to saying, what if you're sitting around the dinner table and you say, what if I had this power? What would I do? And you and it's if that's the exciting part, is the exploration. And I think they did that well with Kilgrave.
Yeah, because when you see your hero in peril, you need to know if it's real or not. So when she is fighting Luke, you want to know how much trouble she's in.
Right.
That point. I mean, because you're trying to be emotionally invested and you're trying to, you're fearing for the hero. But
so
if
you need
can't
to know what the situation is.
Exactly. Because if you can't tell what level of power she, like, for example, if she happened to have a glass jaw, like if she actually had, was capable of being knocked out just like anybody else was, it's just like she could deal it, but she couldn't take it.
Right.
Then how she fought with Luke would have a whole different kind of danger in it. You'd be like, you know, she'd have to, you know, bob and weave a lot more or something like that. But if we know she can just thrash one-on-one with him, well, then you'd be looking for another source of weakness and you'd be like, oh, this is going to get her. But if you don't know, it's hard to know how much trouble she's in. Right. Just like her big Matrix scene in the bus train station. She's got SWAT team completely surrounding her, right? And we don't know what her bullet tolerance is. Seriously, I mean we saw Luke shake some stuff off, but she's got snipers all around her. And in that scene, she pulls that the Zool backflip to try to land further in the. But at that moment, I didn't know what level of danger she was in. I I'm not sure that just punching a bunch of guys with guns is the way out of a situation like that. So I didn't know what was going on. I really didn't know what degree of danger she was in.
Yeah, so it is nice to know like what the extent of the powers are and have them be simple. And it also helps when not only do you know what danger they're in, but when you see them with their maybe limited powers find a really clever way out that you didn't think of. That's exciting. And you go, oh, man. Mm-hmm. You know, they pull a little bit of that in Sense8. Has anybody seen that?
Yeah, we'll talk about that one.
All right. Okay. I won't jump in. Anyway, that was my point.
Yeah, that's just Sense8.
I thought you liked that, but anyway.
We had a conversation before, and do you know who's behind Sense8, right, Kat?
Wachowskis.
Yeah.
Of course. How could you not know?
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's not go there right now.
Right.
Yeah, because it was about to happen. I was about to start on it, but let's just stop on Sense8. I mean, I watched the whole thing. Okay.
I've already forgotten it.
Jessica Jones.
I feel like time's running out. Actually, there's a bit more, I think, in Jessica Jones.
Well, what else do you have to say? Because I'm over.
Well, I mean, quickly. I mean, I would just want to say, one of the other things I liked about it, I did like the Carrie Moss side story, not to make another Wachowski reference, but I did like her subplot, and I liked the way it played out through the end of the series. I also liked the subplots involving Jessica's weirdo neighbors.
I love that upstairs neighbor. She's great.
Yeah.
But that actress and go ahead.
So that was all good stuff. And again, the short version is I really like the show and I really look forward to season two, although I'm probably more looking forward to Luke Cage since he was one of my favorite things about this series.
Mine too.
To be honest. I'm serious. I love Luke Cage because when I first saw the actor who they cast to be him like a year ago, whatever it was, and I didn't know who he was, and I thought, oh, he seems too bland looking to be Luke Cage. No, he's cool. He's fine. And then we talked about Simpson a bit earlier. I hated Simpson the whole entire show. Whether he was good, bad, or confused or raging, I didn't like any version of him. I thought he was ridiculous the whole time. Almost every time he was on screen the entire show, I don't know why I've burdened myself to watch like almost every single comic book show that that's out right now.
It's our duty. It's our duty.
It is.
But they're mostly terrible. Or at least that's how I feel. I know
you better not start talking about Arrow because you and I are going to fight.
We can talk about Arrow, but I can just use Flash as an example, or I can use Gotham as an example, or I can use many things as an example. It doesn't have to be Arrow. No, before I go down that road, I want to address something else. Earlier, Kat, when you were talking about, the gender thing, and maybe this seems too typical, this, that, what I wanted to say back then is something else I'd look at or point to is Agent Carter, the show. Because I don't know if you've seen it.
Keep meaning to. I just need to sit down.
I'm not going
to
dig into that right now, especially since you haven't seen it. But to me, that's trying to accomplish the same thing as Jessica Jones, but going a whole opposite direction. And I will take the Jessica Jones version any day over the Agent Carter version. I know other people like Agent Carter out there. I personally do not at all. So that, me having already seen Agent Carter, probably strengthens my positive feelings towards Jessica Jones, the show. And so a lot of things that you were saying earlier, I was just like, have you seen Agent Carter?
No.
Like, have you? Because...
Well, no, I just get bored when every time there's a female lead that it also always have to do with a man, a baby, or fashion. Okay. And I'm just sick of the typical rape or whatever. I'll watch it and I'll get back with you and I'm pretty sure I'll be just like The Expanse. Eric, you were right, blah, blah. Well, but right now, you're wrong.
Except the Expanse is good.
No, you are right about The Expanse.
But anyway, that's Agent Carter for another day. But it kind of reminds me of what I was just about to say about superhero shows in general of the current crop, which is I watch them all, but I do not enjoy them all at all. Yet I still compulsively watch them. But I am starting to realize as time goes by that it's so just different people with different strokes. I'm talking about the audiences, because I have come to notice that I am definitely one of those people who, again, Daredevil and Jessica Jones are at the top for me. They're the pinnacle, exactly what I like in television in general, but also in the superhero genre field. But I am starting to more and more recognize the people who are very much not like me and lean much more towards the Arrows and the Flashes and I guess Gotham and other things. And I'm just starting to recognize that more. And because a lot of the things that we have said on this about, this is very dark and a lot of this, the story is unpleasant. A lot of the characters are pleasant in this and Daredevil. And I guess I am drawn to that. I'm a person who's drawn to that in my shows.
Yes, because you like Battlestar Galactica. And there's definitely
plenty of people. That's an amazing show. But there's plenty of people who swing the other way and are much more happy to hang out in Arrowville and Flashtown, which I get it. I mean, it's just like a different philosophy, really, of enjoyment.
Because, whatever.
No.
I get it. Whatever? I'm not discounting what you're saying.
It is what it is. I'm not saying it is what it is,
but I just...
This isn't directed towards you, though.
I know. I'm just saying whatever. You just give Arrow such a hard time. It's just supposed to be a fun, goofy show, and that's it.
I know, and so I can only treat it as a fun, goofy show, which is, I'll have to completely, because, one of the things I like in any show is characters that are believable. They don't have to be like real life believable, but at least believable in their universe, and have some type of logic in the TV universe that they exist in, and I feel the DC shows do not abide by that at all, regardless of if you think they're fun and whimsy. The characters have the biggest like lapses of memory and judgment and of who they are as a character.
Okay,
in the DC.
That's fine.
I'm just
Jessica
saying,
Jones,
that's another.
That's fine. Jessica Jones. Let's stick to Jessica Jones.
I'm just saying it's important because I was slightly confused when I saw other people's opinions of Jessica Jones and Daredevil, who were like, oh, yeah, it was okay, but no, I'm not into it. And at first, it kind of threw me. But I'm just saying I'm much more understanding now
Well, like I said, when I first started this podcast, it is good. However, it's depressing. And I don't really need that type of darkness in my life. I've had my own darkness in my life. My life has been a little hard. So I don't need to see something that's just going to add to that. I want to see something that's going to take me away from that. And so shows like Arrow with their unbelievability or something that's not real or visit a little bit of escapism. That's more what I want. You know what I'm saying? I don't want Jessica Jones because I don't need that type of.
Sci-fi and fantasy at its best takes things that we experience, you know, good or bad, and exaggerates it. So it gives us the escapism or it gives us a different perspective on what we've already dealt with. But it's got to have both pieces of it. Otherwise, you're just watching drama. And it's walking a mighty, you know, thin line, Jessica Jones, because it's very dark. It's very sad for a lot of the relationships are all dark. The emotional situations are all very dysfunctional in Jessica. And then they don't give us enough of the superhero stuff to take us out of that.
Yeah.
Daredevil, as dark as it is, as greedy as it is, they still sit around and drink and they have some fun. And they enjoy, they're laughing.
Daredevil is a little lighter. I think the visuals are just dark in Daredevil because they're trying to make a piece of entertainment with a superhero in it that does best with the lights off. You're going to get a dark show that's fun, I guess.
Yeah. And then the other thing, to their credit, at least with the Marvel Netflix shows, what the heck is their budget for this and Daredevil? It's through the roof. And one thing I like about both of those series is that it definitely feels like a 13-part movie. Broken down into pieces, or it is like a novel.
It has all the
nice little details that you wouldn't normally have the time to tell in a film, because you know I would hate to see the film version of Jessica Jones of this story. Like it just wouldn't be the same. I like to flesh it out completely, even if it
feels like chapters.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like chapters.
I enjoyed that.
But I'm saying, but also the look. I can't stop thinking and talking about the direction of cinematography for both these shows.
It wasn't expensive. They didn't use any special effects.
No. I think it was extremely expensive. I think both of these series were extremely expensive, and they were much more expensive than all the other superhero shows, the current ones.
I'm gonna agree with that. I will say I believe that that Daredevil is more expensive because Daredevil has a little bit more special effects, but particularly the fight choreography and the sets necessary to support that.
Yeah, I would tend to believe that Daredevil is the more expensive of the two.
But what he's talking about is, I mean, you don't get that kind of consistent mood and theatrical cinematography on the cheap. You get the space that they create and the moods that they create with light and with composition is very, very high quality. So you combine the effects, you combine the fight scenes, choreography, the sets that need to support that, and that look that they are able to maintain throughout all of these series, very, very high quality. It is not the sitcom-y like feel that you see on some of the non-Netflix, non-cable superhero shows.
Yeah, absolutely. While they have more effects, the other ABC Studios Marvel shows, just watch them. I mean, whether it's Agent Carter's S.H.I.E.L.D., and I like S.H.I.E.L.D., but they are extremely studio bound, extremely. Yeah. Like, I almost think it's like classic Star Trek, like a Hollywood town where they shoot most of those shows. Yeah. And then over in Arrow Flashland, even though a lot of it is filmed on location in Vancouver, etc., there's still a considerable amount of those shows that is filmed in a studio as well.
Yeah, they're always in the press room, always in the coffee shop. They always go back to those.
Yes, absolutely. And while some of Daredevil and Jessica Jones is filmed on a set, that it is such a minuscule amount compared to just watch any episode of either of these shows and look at how much New York City location shooting that we see. It is off the charts.
Awesome budget.
It's incredible.
It's pretty.
It's incredible. But yeah, I mean, I would love to see Arrow or Flash if it was produced. I mean, even if it was the same script, same actors, but if it was produced on this budget, on this type of location shooting, I would love to see Arrow or Flash done in that way. But that's just, that's not a reality.
I just think that they're just filmed two different places and that's it. I think the budget. I'm just saying. I think that is
categorically.
I mean, but it's like it's gonna feel darker in New York City because it's New York City. Like, but then when you go to Vancouver, it's just gonna have that different style.
You say it's sunnier in Canada.
Well, it's not sunnier in Canada, but it is greener.
No, granted, the cities are different cities, and we get all that. But I'm just saying, just sit there with a stopwatch and clock, like, the amount of footage shot on location or on a set, regardless of if it's Vancouver or New York City, and you're going to see a big, big, big difference. When they look at all, I've been watching Jessica Jones this whole time we've been talking. Look how often they are in a high-rise building, and when you see through the windows, you actually see real landscape behind the windows and not some sort of backdrop or whatever.
Because it's they're actually in New York City and they don't have to.
I understand, but
and it's Arrow free.
Arrow doesn't have real Vancouver buildings through the
because
windows.
Because it's not supposed to be set in Vancouver. If you show Vancouver buildings, it's going to be weird.
No, it's not that weird. And also, Gotham is shot in Brooklyn, but you don't get all this.
It's still darker, though. It has a dark palette.
It's not about the dark palette. Because I'm saying, if all they cared about was the dark palette, then why the heck are they shooting on location in New York so much? Because then you notice it's not just for the dark palette. You can color grade anything to make it look dark. But just look at the minute screen time of Jessica Jones just being shot on location. And you will see what separates it and Daredevil from everything else of all these other shows.
Because they're outside and then the other people in the studio. Okay, that's great.
It's huge. It's huge, though. It's huge. And even if people aren't necessarily conscious of it as they're watching the show, I think it works on a subconscious level, whether people recognize it or not. I really think it does.
They're wasting their money with me because I'm watching it at like 460p or something.
Right.
that is a crime.
Oh, let's not get Eric onto that I've watched everything on my iPad.
I was watching Daredevil last night. I was mainstreaming it for what reason I don't know, but I watched a lot of Daredevil last night. And one thing I noticed, because the Netflix shows, not just these, but the other ones that are produced for Netflix, they're all shot in 4K. Which is more which is more than our standard televisions and cable providers can handle. And I was noticing, especially during Daredevil, more than Jessica Jones, there is a 4K Netflix service which you can pay for. It's just, again, I don't have that kind of TV, but I could tell just watching in 1080p, it cannot handle Daredevil. My equipment, it can't. Because Daredevil, as opposed to Jessica Jones, has a very high degree of intentional grain level in the series, and it doesn't translate well through Netflix streaming, even 1080p. So it comes up as just looking like weird, like distortion, like fuzzy distortion, but not true grain, which is making me want to get Daredevil on Blu-ray if and when that exists.
Because that's what that complaint on Twitter.
I want to see the way it's supposed to look, because 1080p can't handle it. By the way, same thing happens for The Walking Dead, which is shot on 16mm film. It does not come across when you watch it on AMC or streaming on Netflix. You got to watch the Blu-ray and you see the actual, looks like it was shot on actual film, Texas Chainsaw Massacre style film.
I'm fine. I mean, I get it. I don't need to see.
I'm speaking for the weird people who are afflicted like me, but I'm just saying it is so beyond gorgeous, and we can't even appreciate it for the most part.
That's cool. Is 4K something that can be put on Blu-ray? I mean, is that?
Oh, absolutely.
It'll fit on there.
Yes.
So if I get one of these out in Blu-ray and shove it into
timeout. Okay, on Blu-ray, it's going to look better already, but it's not going to be true 4K, because while there are some 4K Blu-rays, there's not many. And then also part of the reason why there's not many is because they're trying to debut like the Blu-ray 2.0, which is going to be more the 4K.
Okay, all right.
So, but fine. But that being said, a standard Blu-ray version of any of these shows is going to look much better than your 1080p stream.
Yeah.
And that's it for Sci-Fi Party Line technical discussion. Okay, guys. I know what you're saying was amazing, but
Eric said something about 4K.
No. It's a big deal.
I want that.
I just feel like
in my life,
everybody's eyes have glazed over. Like, I'm interested. I think it's super
except
awesome.
Except for the people who can see 4K.
Okay, that's fine. So let's do any final thoughts on Jessica Jones.
I'll do one.
Okay.
I'll do a couple.
Okay.
I like some of the things that haven't been mentioned, maybe. Something I like, the relationship between Jessica and her radio host friend is once again one of those devoted
bromance,
non-sexual partnerships that I really, really like. It's one of my favorite things. Having a character that you can really trust, who's really honorable, is just great. And they don't reveal that to you immediately. At the beginning of the show, Jessica Jones just comes up to her friend and she's like, "Give me some money." And you think it's kind of a nasty relationship. And when they finally go into the backstory and you realize how tight they are, that was a really satisfying turn.
True.
I think. I agree with Kat that it's dark. I love the show just because I'm not just into sci-fi. I'm into any storytelling where it can really trick me into buying in.
Concur.
I like that. I don't care if it's sci-fi. I don't care what it is. And so I don't think that the darkness, that it's necessary that it had to be dark to make that happen. I think it just happens to be I just think that the mood of the show happens to be a dark one, and they happened to do a really good job with suspension of disbelief. However, yes, I would prefer if it had the vibe of, say, Northern Exposure or something, and was really much more friendly. And still,
that's
I could
that's
buy
Guardians
in.
Of the Weird? Galaxy. There. That's Guardians of the Galaxy. No, I would appreciate that too, but that's Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man. Territory.
I didn't need it to be funny though, so but I'm gonna let you finish your thought and I can.
Okay, so I think right now a lot of times what you see is if the show is light and fluffy like Flash, I have a really hard time buying into it.
Concur.
And I don't think that has to be the case. I wish it wasn't, but that seems to be the case, and hopefully things will come up that aren't this dark but I can buy right into. Let's see. I thought that the Special Forces guy, I too had kind of a bad reaction to him, but not necessarily because of his character, but I think the whole 5-hour energy pill deal,
felt tacked on.
Yeah. And a little redundant because you've already got people doing crazy stuff and losing control of themselves because they're under the influence of something else. And so that just seemed like more of that, and it wasn't as impressive. So.
I just want to say that I think that was injected into the story because of Trish and trying to set her up for the future. And I think that's why you get all that.
Okay, so we'll find out.
Later. And at least all of these things, those and other things in this show, at least all this stuff draws from the comic books as well.
Okay, see, and I don't know about all that.
All of it does.
And it all does seem to, I do understand that they seem to be tracking all of this stuff back to the same laboratory that seems to have created a lot of these people.
Yeah.
I am assuming at this point. I don't know because I haven't seen this. But I assume it all ties together. However, at this point, it seemed a little redundant. That's it. That's it for me.
Okay, Eric, since you're kind of on a roll there.
I've said most of my piece already, but
do
I guess
not
the,
talk about 1080p and 4K, please.
Be still my heart. But I guess the other thing that I just remembered right now that I forgot to mention as minor laments again for both Daredevil and Jessica Jones was that I really liked the black detective character.
Oh, yeah.
He's another person I wanted to see carry on. And I'll tweet you some pictures later, but the actor who they cast to play that character, he looks spot on, like the spitting yeah. image. He looks exactly the same in the comic, but it's as if the comic was drawn to look like that actor, except that the comic came first. Very strange. It's weird. But I didn't like him being dispatched the way it worked for effect, like shock value, but I didn't want to spend that character for that little piece of shock value. I didn't like that. I wish he was still going to be around, because I like the second and third tier characters in any show that are interesting, and I like to see them carry on Wedge Antilles style. And it was the other issue I had in Daredevil 2. I really liked I think his character Ben Urich, the reporter for the not the Bugle, but the Bugle's rival. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Daredevil. Yeah, because he also is a character from the comic books and a well known, and to just kill him off too.
Yeah, like, that's ridiculous.
Can't a guy ever get, I mean, not just in Daredevil the show, but I mean, he's a big character in Marvel, a big little character in Marvel. He's like never been seen like in any Marvel property. We finally get him. He's super awesome, and boom, killed. What? Ugh. So yeah, those are my two minor laments, because I like both of those minor characters.
Mm. Carl?
I think I'm good.
Hey.
Yeah.
Okay. Final thoughts, Jessica Jones. Like I said, I think it is a very good show. It's very engaging. Just, I don't know. It's okay. Maybe I'll watch it when it comes back on. Maybe I won't. But it just was, like, really hard to watch. Maybe they won't. I mean, now that Kilgrave is gone, we could put this abusive-type story behind and see exactly what she's made of and what she does outside of this, because that was a major part of her life. So, but if she comes back and she's still dealing with the fallout from this guy the whole season, then I'm going to be super annoyed. Oh. Carl, are you saying something? Because
it's not Carl.
Oh, okay.
There's one more important thing before the show concludes I wanted to sneak in. Or I don't know how much you guys had kept up with these Netflix shows before they came out and what's happening in the future. And I'm very interested in what anybody else thinks about the already laid out plans in the future with this universe on Netflix.
Okay.
Talking to us or to our audience?
I'm talking to you guys here, but also
don't know.
To the
I don't know large. About it, and I don't really particularly.
Because yeah. Okay, because I find this interesting, because I sometimes see these articles tweeted or wherever on social media about, and apparently a lot of people don't know, and apparently you guys are good examples. But for me, like since a year ago, I've been up on this stuff, waiting for Daredevil, waiting for Jessica Jones. But this is just the tip of the Marvel Netflix spear. Can we entertain this for a sec? Because you know they're trying to do like what they did with Avengers in the Marvel movies. That's exactly right. What they're doing on Netflix.
That's fine, because Luke Cage is coming next.
Except instead of Avengers, they're doing the Defenders, and these are like the beginning of our Defenders team. You know Luke Cage is coming next. Woo! but you know Daredevil season 2 is coming now.
Yes, I know.
And you know that there's another important character who is in Daredevil season 2, who's already been cast, who supposedly did so well in Daredevil season 2 that he is supposedly getting his own show added to the mix, and we're not even done there.
What's his name? Who is it?
Well, it's the Punisher, spoiler alert, but he's played by an actor that we will all recognize from The Walking Dead of the past.
Who?
Certain very infamous
just say character. The name, man.
Shane! Ah! This cast is the this is old news, by the way.
This is the good Punisher. New news. I missed that actor so much.
Cast is the Punisher. I'm sure they've almost finished, if not already, Daredevil season 2. And supposedly the rumor is that he was so good at his portrayal of the Punisher that supposedly they're going to have a standalone Punisher series as well.
Yes.
Revolving around his character. And we're still not done, because we still need to have Iron Fist added to the mix, who has not been cast yet. And then, after all this, we finally get to the Defenders. which, on a fan speculation point, there's this Doctor Strange film with Benedict Cumberbatch, and that is a film that we all know is already going to happen, but many fans would like, he should be part of Defenders too. And so, you know, people would like to there to be some kind of intermixing with either some of these Netflix people with Doctor Strange or vice versa. Doctor Strange on Netflix, because he brings the whole magic element into the Marvel universe, and he's an important part of all this that hasn't yet to be seen. So this is big time stuff for the future.
I am so glad you cut off my thought to tell me that.
So you guys weren't up on all this? Because it blows my mind.
No, it's good to hear about, though.
Yeah,
a lot of this stuff is secret. A lot of this stuff has been out there for a long time.
You know what? We have lives. So.
I understand, but we're also people who do podcasts and watch.
Well, I've been in school. Come on, I have the equivalent of 3 jobs, Eric. Just leave me alone.
No, I understand, but all of you, and not just
no,
you,
I have no life, Eric.
Fans at large,
no life at all. You can talk to me directly.
This is why I'm so excited, though, because this is just the beginning.
That's fine, but we're gonna try to wrap this episode up. We appreciate the 1080p diversion and the Punisher thing. You saw I screamed. That was great because he's Frank Castle, right? So that's good. And so Jessica Jones, I'm really gonna add, Eric, behave. Let's try to end this. Can we end it, or do you want to just keep talking?
Saying yes is more talking. Please wrap it up.
Okay. All right. So that's our show. That's a weird ending to the show. We love your feedback. 773. That's our show. We love your feedback. Give us a call, 773-336-2686. Go to our website. Leave us a comment at scifipartyline.com. And you can reach us at scifipartyline on Twitter and Facebook with our discussion group and our Facebook page. We are also downloadable on Stitcher Radio. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the show. And we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Goodbye.
Woo, Eric.
See how Kat just Kilgrade me right there? End of line.